Good morning, happy Easter. Thank you so much for joining us. Well, I grew up going to church almost every week, and when you're a kid and you hear the same stories over and over again, you learn them pretty quick. But every once in a while, there's just details to some of those stories that you just are always kind of confused by. My whole life, I always wondered why Jesus rises from the dead, meets Mary, this woman who had great affection for him, and asks, "Why are you weeping?" Have you ever thought about that? Does it almost even sound like a little bit of a thing that a bully would do? Like, we gave out candy bags this morning to the kids, and if I walked over to one of the kids and took a candy bag, and was like, "Oh, do you want this? Why are you crying?" Like, wouldn't that be a really awful thing to do? And in that light, have you ever wondered why Jesus is right there with someone who had great affection for him, asking, "Why are you crying?" Well, we don't have a lot of time before the next church comes in, so I'll just give you the answer. Jesus is using humor, not the bad kind, and not the kind that jerks or bullies use. But Jesus is using the tender and gentle kind of humor that brings people together and utterly changes their perspective. In this case, our perspective on death. The Easter story in John 20 is a beautifully crafted story that teaches us that we can all look at death in an utterly new way. And because of the resurrection of Jesus Christ, we can even laugh at it. So I'd like to study the Easter story from John 20 in two quick parts. In section one, I just want to very briefly talk about some of the ways that our culture most commonly laughs at death. And I want to point out how those are sometimes unfulfilling. And secondly, I want to talk about how John, the author of this story, has written it in a way that empowers us to laugh at death. So let me just share three quick ways that I think that we're all familiar with how people laugh at death, or at least attempt to. And the first is, you living in a mountain town, vacationing out here, from time to time you're going to come across somebody who just really pushes it on the mountain, somebody that just goes off crazy jumps, does really risky things, and somebody might say, "Oh, that person laughs at death," right? That person does things that nobody else would ever attempt. Sometimes when we see people that just go through life with reckless abandon, we think of them as somebody who laughs at death. One of the most fascinating people to me from the 1970s is Evel Knievel. Are you guys familiar with who Evel Knievel was? He was this guy with a great mustache who would get on a motorcycle and wear a cape. I think more people should wear capes. And he would jump over canyons, and he would jump over fountains, and he would jump over school buses and do really crazy things. Evel Knievel is absolutely an example of somebody who laughs at death. However, in his life he made more than 300 motorcycle jumps. He crashed more than 20 times, and he set the Guinness World Record for having broken bones over 433 times. So on one hand, he laughed at death. On the other hand, he spent probably half his adult life in a hospital room or on crutches, right? And so that's one of the ways that we laugh at death, but of course it has its advantages. How about this? How about a youthful aversion to growing old? When you're like under 25, you never think about dying. You never think about getting old. I came across a really interesting quote from Steve Martin. He was a wonderful comedian, and he was on Saturday Night Live, which was this really funny show with skits. And he got together with some of his castmates decades later at some sort of reunion, and they were having this conversation about how they weren't as funny as they used to be, because there were so many things that they no longer felt comfortable joking about. So the quote was this: "When you're young, you have way fewer taboo topics. And then as you go through life, you have experience with your loved ones getting cancer and dying and all the things you used to have made fun of. But now you don't make fun of them anymore. So rebelliousness really is the province of young people." That is true for me as well. When I was younger, I just really wanted to make people laugh. I can remember making jokes about diabetes and Alzheimer's, and everybody laughed, and I thought that was really great. And then I got older, and I had loved ones who had diabetes and Alzheimer's. And all of a sudden, I wouldn't dare make a joke about something that caused so much pain and discomfort. How about this? There's a final way that I think we laugh at death in our culture, and it's just sort of with a coarse denial of death's power. I've been seeing this bumper sticker and t-shirt around town lately. Maybe you've seen it. It says, "Forget cancer," but it uses a different word that starts with F. And people just wear it around. And again, I appreciate the sentiment and the fighter spirit that you need maybe when you're going into treatment and facing something that's so hard. The problem with that attitude is this last Thursday, I lost a dear friend to cancer. I have another dear lifelong friend who's in her last month battling cancer. You can be coarse and you can deny death's power, but cancer doesn't care. And it still spreads tumors all over your body. So there's many ways that we cope with the scary, looming inevitability of death. And I appreciate the way that people face that. But ultimately, there's elements to each of those approaches that aren't fully satisfying. So how in the world is John 20 humorous? I'd like to just take 8 or 9 minutes and uncover how this encounter between Jesus and Mary is really the only sensible and satisfactory way that we can look at and laugh at that. So if we look at verse 14, let's deconstruct the first Easter's most awkward confrontation. It says this, "At this, Mary turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize that it was Jesus. And he asked her, 'Woman, why are you crying? Who is it that you're looking for?'" Let's just, again, think for a second. What is Jesus possibly trying to accomplish? Is that question cruel, or is there something wonderfully more to it? I'd like to spend just the rest of our time, our sermon time this morning, giving 3 reasons why Jesus' question to Mary is witty, endearing, and empowering. And that will be our reflection from Scripture this morning. The first thing that I want to tell you about this confrontation, this question from Jesus, is that it's actually the culmination of the world's most wonderful inside joke. Do you guys have any inside jokes that you share with a friend or a family member or a coworker? An inside joke is some sort of laugh or connecting realization that you share with somebody that other people just don't have that information. They don't have that. Outsiders won't fully grasp it. Can you guys think of any inside jokes that you share with somebody that creates a beautiful connection with you and that person? I've told this story before. Apologies if you've heard it. One of my favorite examples of an inside joke that connects people is something that I heard somebody who was there tell it online. You guys are probably familiar with the comedian Adam Sandler, and he was in college. And he was telling anybody who'd listen that he wanted to be a comedian, he wanted to be a movie star. And one of his professors asked him, "Adam, would you meet me after class?" And his professor took him out to a local campus bar, bought him a beer, and said, "This is really hard to say, but I just want to tell you that I think you need to have a fallback career. Your humor is just not very sophisticated. It's just not for everybody. And I think you need to think about doing something else with your life." And the aspiring comedian was obviously crushed, but he went forward with his dream. Fast forward the story about 20 years, and Adam was out with all of his movie star buddies partying in New York. They were walking through a restaurant, and there at the bar was that same professor. Adam Sandler called all of his movie star buddies around the bar, and he said, "Hey guys, there's somebody that I need to introduce you to." This poor professor thought to himself, "I'm about to be crushed by, this is going to be the worst moment of my life in front of all of these movie stars." And Adam put his hand on the professor's shoulder and he said, "Hey guys, I just wanted to introduce you to my favorite professor. He was the only professor that ever bought me a beer." That's how the story ends. Can you see how that shared information between those two people that nobody else knew the full story created a wonderfully warm connection? I want to show you guys how this conversation between Jesus and Mary is a wonderfully warm connection of shared inside information. And we go back to John 11, verses 32 to 33. We see that Mary was one of the only ones that understood that Jesus was going to die. Says this, When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." And then later on, verses 43-45, it says this, "When he had said this, Jesus came in a loud voice, 'Lazarus, come out.' The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen, cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, 'Take off the grave clothes and let him go.'" In other words, Mary had been an eyewitness to Jesus bringing her brother from the grave back to life. Those grave clothes lie in an empty pile on the ground, and Mary realized that through this man, Jesus, death would no longer separate loved ones. And we learn more about this in John 12:3. There's this beautiful moment where Mary comes a few days later. Listen to this. "A dinner was given in Jesus' honor, and Martha served while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table. Then Mary took a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance of perfume." There's other places in the New Testament that explain that nard was actually the most potent and powerful perfume in the ancient world, and because of that, it was saved for funerals. Because of that, it was put on decomposing bodies so loved ones could just be in the presence of that body just for an extra day or two. And so when Mary is taking the family's funeral perfume and pouring it all out on Jesus' feet, she realizes the information that she's communicating. "I won't need this for Lazarus, my brother. I won't need this for Martha, my sister. I won't need this for my decomposing body, because the one that I pour this perfume on is forever cured death. Don't need to fear funerals and decomposition anymore." Of course, Jesus had to pay a price for this to be true. The pastor Tim Keller says this, "Jesus knew that if he raised Lazarus, if he did that tremendous action, he would be forcing the hand of his enemies. Therefore, Jesus knew if he brought Lazarus out, he would be burying himself. The only way to end Lazarus' funeral was to cause his own. The only way to offer his own death to pardon Lazarus was to sign his own death warrant." So Mary understood that Jesus, to bring people back, would have to offer some sort of solution. He would have to make some sacrifice. He would have to exchange his righteous life for our unrighteous lives. So when Jesus' question, "Woman, why are you crying?" It's an icebreaker, breaking the ice, revealing that these are the only two people in the world at that time that are in on that wonderful inside joke, that through the exchange that Jesus was willing to make, we would forever no longer fear death. Just want to ask you guys a question. Did you know that you can also share that wonderful inside joke? Do you guys know that through putting faith that Jesus Christ died in our place, faced judgment before a righteous God, and burst forth through the grave, that we can have that same laugh with Jesus? I don't want to make fun, but when we get to the end of our lives, our bodies are broken down, and we're no longer in the strength of our youth. But in the twinkling of an eye and the sound of a trumpet, we'll go from our most decrepit state to laughing in the presence of Jesus, sharing in that inside joke. "Stop. Why are you crying? Insert your name here. Why are you crying?" It's not a rebuke. It's laughter between us and the one who made that possible. All right, a second reason why there's just incredible warmth and humor in this story is that the resurrection has diminished the sting of death so greatly that we can laugh at what death used to be compared to what it is now. And there's not necessarily a verse for this, but you just think about the encounter. Mary's crying, and Jesus says, "You know, why are you crying?" And then there's this embrace. Mary's tears are because even though that she knew that Jesus was making some sort of sacrifice or exchange, she didn't understand the resolution that they would be together again. It actually says in the story that she knows that they're going to be resurrected in the last time. Jewish people back then thought that everybody would be resurrected, but Jewish people didn't believe in a singular resurrection. So Mary had no clue that Jesus would come back individually. She's overjoyed when he does. And then this woman who was delivered from incredible mental illness back in Luke 8,
who heard this man say her name in a positive, life-giving way, time after time, who would come to believe that she would never hear that man speak her voice again, and she hears Mary.
And she recognizes that Jesus is with her. There's smiles and laughter when someone realizes that something that we used to think was huge and enormous just really isn't that intimidating anymore. Do you guys remember when you were a real little kid, what it felt like to be stung by a bee? Oh, it's like, when you're 7 or 8, it's the worst thing in the world. And I'm not talking to people that are allergic, okay? I'm not trying to make you feel shame. But for the rest of us, when you're 7 or 8 and you get stung by a bee, you instantly stop what you're doing and you search for the nearest adult and you run and you cry and you fall into their arms. And I don't know if you guys have an experience like this, but I remember I was about 13 or 14 and I was outside doing some landscaping for my mom and dad. I was doing some chores and I got stung by a bee. All of a sudden I started to cry and I stood up and I took a step inside and then I was like, you gotta be kidding me. That's it? That barely even hurts. I'm not gonna run to my mommy. I'm a grown man, even though I'm only 13. And I got back to the chore at hand. There's something wonderful about the discovery of something that we've feared our whole life. It's just not so intimidating and overwhelming as we thought. There's laughter between Mary and Jesus because she thought that death would forever separate them. But there's Jesus calling out her name. Jesus will go on to bring teaching and affirmation to the disciples. He'll reinstate Peter. He'll give believers the Great Commission. He'll do a lot of other considerable things. But the power of this moment is that anyone who's ever feared that death forever breaks families, everybody who's feared that death will silence those that we've lost, if your loved one who's passed was in Christ, will hear that name again, will embrace again, will eat food with them again. The permanence and the sting of death is exposed for so much less than our fears have made it. I won't bore you with the details, but there's a really terrible translation in this story. In verse 17, your Bibles probably say that Jesus responds to Mary, "Do not cling to me." Well, Greek is a really tricky language, and the tenses can be interpreted in different ways, and they can all be correct. But to get the perfect translation, you have to understand tone and context. And translators are often just focused on grammar and linguistic structure and things like that. I want you guys to know with absolute certainty, Jesus does not say to Mary, "Do not cling to me." He says, "Stop clinging so tightly." Isn't that a game changer? He's not like, "I am a robot, I don't like to hug, I have to return to my Father." It's this wonderful moment of intimacy and embracing. And Jesus says, "Stop clinging so tightly." There's probably people here that came here this morning with something in their past that thought that Jesus' words to you this morning or just overall would be, "Do not cling to me." Jesus' words are, "Don't cling so tightly," through laughter in that moment. The third and final thing I want to point out that makes this just such a tender and intimate moment where Mary and Jesus can laugh at death is this. You can't really be stumped by any of life's questions when your teacher is with you. All right? Here in John 20:16, Jesus calls to her, "Mary." She turns towards him and cries out in Aramaic, "Teacher." So we ask this question, "Mary, why are you crying?" And she's got a lot going through her head. She's like, "Well, I didn't know where Jesus' body was." It wasn't until that exact moment that she even realized who he was. We could go on and on. Just put yourself in that situation and think about all the emotional and theological questions that Mary had at that moment. And the angels are asking questions, and Jesus is asking questions, and she doesn't have answers to any of them, and all of a sudden, she laughs because she realizes that the one that's asking her the questions is also the one that has all the answers. Another reason why we laugh at death is because Jesus is now with us. And whatever we face, the shortage of logic, the shortage of answers, our great teacher is there with us. Have you guys ever seen that viral video clip of that little girl who's like 11 years old
and she's singing the national anthem at an NBA basketball game. It happened in Portland about 8 or 9 years ago. So this girl won this contest. She's got a beautiful voice, but she's in an arena full of people, and she starts singing the national anthem, and all of a sudden, and she's doing a great job, right? This is a great moment. She gets about 2 or 3 verses into it, and she forgets the lyrics. And she kind of laughs nervously, and she looks around, and the music kind of slows down, and she's just mortified. And the Portland Trailblazers coach, Maureen Speaks, who's been a basketball player his whole life, he had probably heard the national anthem 1,000 times. He's like giving his players like the instructions of what they're supposed to do in 30 seconds when the ball gets tipped. He stops what he's doing, comes over to Natalie, puts his arms around her, and at first he starts just whispering the lyrics. And she's like, oh, finally. So now she's back on track, and she sings another line or two to the national anthem. But then she forgets again. She starts singing out loud with her. And you got to go home and watch the video on YouTube. There's this beautiful expression on her face that second time that she messes up the lyrics, where this sly grin comes on her face because she realizes that even if she doesn't know the lyrics, the one with the answers is right there singing over her. I want everyone to just take a moment and emote. I want everyone to just take a moment and get their feelings going. And I just want to make this final point. Even when we're flustered, even when we're discouraged about not having the answers, even as we suffer, we can have that same smirk or grin, knowing that the one who has the answers is with us. And then later on in John 20, verse 22, Jesus gathers with all the disciples and he breathes on them, which is kind of awkward. Keep in mind this was pre-COVID, so it was okay. It says he breathes on them and he says, receive the Holy Spirit. He's saying that the presence of God is now with you everywhere that you go. You will be flustered, you will suffer, but God's presence, the one who has the answers, is with you. So I'd like to invite the worship team to come conclude our service. And the next time you get to this story and you wonder why Jesus is asking Mary, why are you crying? It's not out of cruelty. It's not out of a desire to create awkwardness. It's out of a wonderful shared inside joke that death has lost its power because of the exchange of Jesus Christ's righteous life with our unrighteous life. It's laughing at what death used to be versus what death now is for us. And it's laughter at that wonderful reminder that our teacher is now with us. As we sing this final song or two, I need to see some smiles on those faces. This is a story of warmth and laughter and intimacy because of how the resurrection of Jesus Christ has utterly changed our perspective on death.